In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
A really dark sky in the middle of the day is basically movie shorthand for something going badly wrong. So the fact that in much of BC and parts of Alberta, an ominous gray or orange haze has clung to cities and communities for more than a week now is concerning. It's smoke from the second straight year of brutal forest fires burning through BC. It's bad for the views, of course, but also for lungs, hearts, the outdoor events, and the general mental health of the populace. But when you ask the experts about how to fix the problem, they don't actually talk about how to stop the fires. They talk about how to live with them. Because this second year of brutal forest fires is going to turn into a third and a fourth, and you get the idea. Something needs to change here, but it's probably us. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
In part, the forest fires we're seeing today are because of changes and reductions in forest health as a consequence of trying to put out fire and remove it from the landscape. So there's the paradox.
Lori Daniels is a forestry professor at the University of British Columbia. She's often out there as close to the BC trees as anyone not actively battling the flames. Lori, where are you right now?
I am actually in Vancouver. So I'm in Vancouver and heading out actually this weekend to the interior of BC to teach a course, a field course, to our forestry students that is on ecology and disturbance of our forests. So we'll be doing follow-up work looking at the effects of wildfires from last year and dodging the smoke from this year's fires.
It sounds like a really hands-on experience.
It is. That's exactly our goal. Experiential learning, taking all those things from the classrooms and the labs and putting it into action in the forest. A whole week of it.
What kind of conversations do you kind of hear? I know we like to talk about the weather all the time, and this is kind of a whole different level.
I'm hearing from many people, I guess many concerns. So people are voicing concerns locally about the smoke and its impacts on their health and how it's making them feel, you know, with irritated eyes and with sore throats and the impacts on their breathing and their ability to go out and do sports and recreate and not have it affect them negatively. So that's what I'm hearing from my local neighbors and their concern. They're also voicing concerns about the tremendous impacts of the wildfires in the interior of BC. Clearly, wildfire has captured our attention, maybe for all the wrong reasons. We're here on back-to-back extreme wildfire seasons, breaking records in terms of the number of fires burning in every region of the province. To have fires that are of note, over 50 fires of note, meaning they are nearby communities with visible smoke or putting communities at risk and requiring citizens to be on evacuation alert or order. I think that's unheard of in the history of British Columbia. So we are starkly aware between 2017 and 2018 that wildfires have huge impacts on our citizens and communities. And I'm hoping that people are understanding that there are many factors or many things that we can be doing to reduce the risk of wildfire impacts on our homes and communities. And that now, if not yesterday, is absolutely the time for us to act. We need to adapt because these fires are going to keep coming at us.
Have we just entered a new era now where every summer season is going to be like this?
Well, we have been seeing in the instrumental records, so just watching the temperature records and looking at temperature patterns over the last century, temperatures have been increasing in many areas, if not all areas of British Columbia. Precipitation is more variable. Over the full year, we've seen increases in precipitation in some areas. In the southern half of the province, we see precipitation reducing, and we've seen more rain and less snowpack in the winters. And those are patterns and trends that are projected to continue due to climate change. So we're measuring in our instrumental weather records the kinds of changes that we have also been talking about as being both ongoing and continuing into the future, according to our climate projections due to climate change.
in the big picture, all the other ways these fires change things, how will they impact the way we live out west?
Well, I don't think this is constrained to just out west. I think all across Canada, you know, we have forests that surround our communities across our nation. We have, you know, homeowners and cottage owners, you know, who are surrounded by forests. And so all of us, I think, need to learn to live with fire.
What do you mean by that?
I think as homeowners and communities, we need to be better informed. We need to understand the ecosystems that surround us, understand how they are fire prone and the conditions under which they are likely to burn. We need to understand that all of us need to be fire smart. We need to be going to the Fire Smart Canada website and taking the time to look at their advice and act on it. For individual homeowners, that means making sure there's no debris on your roof that could burn in the case of a spark from a wildfire landing on your home. Removing burnable debris and vegetation from immediately surrounding your home. Making choices like not stacking your firewood next to your house, which is the kindling for your house fire. There's logical things we can all be doing that take just a few hours of our time, and it helps us to safeguard our homes and create defensible space around our homes. If we go up to the community level, you know, communities, cities, and towns, they need to be assessing the forest fuels, the burnable vegetation in the forests or vegetation immediately surrounding their community. We need to look at how much burnable material is there. How dense are the trees? Often what we need to do is reduce the number of trees. So that means cutting and thinning out the forest, removing the small trees that act as ladders connecting burnable material on the ground. When you have small and intermediate trees, they can conduct fire from the ground up into the canopy of the trees. So when we do wildfire fuels mitigation, we are managing the vegetation that can burn. So we remove the surface fuels. We try to reduce the number of small trees that could conduct fire into the canopy of trees, because once a fire is burning treetop to treetop, it's extremely difficult to control.
You deal with forests all the time, and, you know, you're taking a class out to look at the damage and to see current fires. You're comfortable with it. Do you kind of have a sense of what a different thing it is for you to say all of us need to learn to live with fire to people who just don't, right? Like, that's a huge statement.
It is a huge statement. And here's the fact. Wildfires, we're not ever going to be able to stop them from occurring. In fact, we've spent decades trying to suppress all fires that start. In British Columbia, we've had a 92% success rate over many decades. What that has meant, the unintended consequence that we simply didn't know was happening, is that by putting out those fires, we've made large areas of our landscapes, literally millions of hectares, are consistent. They're all mature forests. They all have similar vegetation types and structures. So now when fires burn, they're burning through areas that are very, very consistent, and there are no natural fuel breaks on the landscape, or very few of them. If we allow fires to burn, they change the amount of fuel in the forest. They change the structure of the forest and the composition. So as fire burns, it might be hot and fast in some areas, but then it hits an area with a past fire where the fuels are different. The forest structure is less burnable. And so the fire calms down, the fire behavior changes, and those natural fuel breaks created by historical fires, those are the places where we can have a better chance of controlling and stopping fires.
That makes so much sense. I can't believe it took us a long time to realize that. What changed?
You know, I would say that fire managers and fire scientists have known that for a long time. What has changed? Well, we still suppress fires. We've changed policy here in British Columbia. As of 2012, we do assess fires, determine if they're threatening to lives and homes and communities. And if they are not, if they're in remote areas, we allow them to burn. That's a management strategy that gets that resilience back onto the landscape. Now, under extreme fire weather that we're experiencing last summer and this summer, where almost the entire province is at high to extreme fire danger, that's not a strategy we're going to implement this summer.
Right.
When new ignitions are occurring, of course, we're trying to put them out. The weather conditions are too extreme for that to be safe. So that allowing fires to burn is most effective under less extreme fire weather conditions. And so under the cooler and wetter summers relative to the past two, it's a strategy that we need to be using not only in BC, but in other places across the country.
Do we have the resources to do that much forest management all at one time?
Well, forest management in British Columbia is ongoing. So we are, there are trees harvested every year. It's a major part of our economy, regenerating the forest to the best of our ability, using our native tree species to try to optimize their growth, is our mandate towards sustainable forest management. We have some very good policies in place, but we have others that I think need to be updated as we learn from our mistakes. So I think the onus right now is on the forest managers and the government officials to acknowledge the mistakes we've made in the past and to come up with better plans. We are excellent in BC at making very good, ecologically based, sustainable choices for a single patch of forest. What we have absolutely failed on is looking beyond a single patch and zooming out and looking at the forest as a whole across, as patches across an entire landscape. We have not done a good job of figuring out how the different patches interact with each other. And until we scale up and look at that landscape view and begin to set policies towards maintaining resilient forests at the landscape level, forest management that is adapted to climate change and prepared for future wildfires, I don't think we're going to succeed.
Is there a tipping point where enough of the forests have burned that we're in danger of losing these forests, or are they always going to be regenerating?
Well, forests are amazing ecosystems, and wildfire is a natural component of those forests. In fact, it's an essential component of the forest ecosystem and how it functions. And in part, the forest fires we're seeing today are because of changes and reductions in forest health as a consequence of trying to put out fire and remove it from the landscape. So there's the paradox. Will our forests recover from these fires? Well, they have evolutionary adaptations that make them able to respond to fire and to regenerate. It will take some time, and especially in areas where fires have burned at high intensity and have had great impacts, not only at killing trees and vegetation, but in some places the fires have burned all the organic material in the seed banks right in the soil itself. In those places, it will take much longer for the forest to recover. Unfortunately, we're seeing in some ecosystems around North America and globally where these extreme fires are burning, the forests are not recovering in the patterns and ways that we would have expected them to, based on our observations of how forests responded to fire in the past.
Does that scare you?
That makes me very nervous. That would be an example of a threshold or a tipping point being crossed where the disturbance now is so severe that the forest is not recovering.
How do you determine if that's what's happening in BC?
Well, we've spent the full summer, June through August, out in the forest, establishing study sites at almost 175 locations in areas that burned last summer. And our goal there is to monitor those forests over time and to figure out how are the plants recovering, how are the trees recovering, what trees are growing back, and how successful are they. For trees that actually survive the fire, are they going to survive over the long term? We often see that trees that were green the first year after a fire actually had sufficient damage to them that over subsequent years they begin to die. And so those are the kinds of effects, secondary effects, both positive and negative from the fires that we are watching for.
My last question is for you as a Vancouverite and person who lives in BC. What does it do to, I mean, the rest of Canada kind of has an image of BC as, you know, beautiful, picturesque mountains, people are outside all the time, hiking, cycling, swimming are all part of the identity. What does it do to the psyche of a province when the smoke is hanging over it and that doesn't happen?
I think all citizens of BC have been affected by the fires, both of 2017 and 2018. those who were most directly affected, who have been evacuated from their homes, or who have spent days and weeks on evacuation alert or evacuation order. Sadly, those who've lost properties, homes, or other properties in the province, you know, they've been extremely traumatized. Our emergency services people have been traumatized by both the amount of effort that they're putting in to try to stop these fires and to help the citizens who are being affected by them. So we are discovering those kind of direct effects. In terms of those of us who are also affected, but not by having to leave our homes or to have our homes damaged or lost, I think it's affecting all of us in BC. It's making us aware of our situation, and I'm hoping it will open people's eyes to the fact that wildfires are here to stay with us. The impacts of wildfires are tremendous. They're getting worse because of climate change. But here is my most important message. We know solutions to reduce the impacts on communities. We have solutions for making forests and communities more resilient. It needs political will and it needs investment in order to fulfill that, so that communities and citizens within them can feel safe during wildfire season. But they've also proactively managed the forests around them, created those defensible spaces around their homes and communities, so that they have confidence that if and when, and I won't even say when a wildfire comes near their community, they have adequately prepared their home, their community. They have an emergency plan that they can enact that to the best of their ability and hopefully have a positive result for their individual homes and, again, to safeguard communities and forests.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.
That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. All our episodes are there, a little bit about us, contact us form, hit us up, or find us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on your favorite podcast app, be that Apple, Google, Stitcher, wherever. You can subscribe for free. You can rate us. You can review us. You can post us on your social media and spread the word. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We will talk tomorrow.